Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is the show that gets to the bottom of it, the bottom of the bottom of the bottom. That's why you listen to it. Hopefully you're understanding that. You got to hear it again and again and again, because this education, these educational shows I do on radio, they run deep. Thus, we have the archives so you can listen to them again and again and again, because you need to. My dream is to get you more educated, because then I don't have to work as hard. There's the agenda. This is a show, this is a radio series about thresholds. And what the 119 shows are about are thresholds, crescendos in health. So on one end of the spectrum, we ask ourselves, what's the quick fix herb that we can use to get rid of the symptom? And hopefully you get off that easy. When you don't, you got to get educated all the way to, well, healing. Healing for some of you is almost like a PhD of its own. You have to master yourself, your psyche, your structure, your nutrition. You have to have mastery of your subject to deliver you to the other side. And so in a sense, then, healing is about thresholds or crescendos. Now, what do I mean by a threshold? Well, when your pH gets consistently alkaline, you try the Carl, that wonderful product, the Carl Legend, ionized calcium. You associate it to an aloe, brings it into the bloodstream a little bit faster, and you hope your pH shifts, and it does or it doesn't. When it doesn't, you change your diet. When it doesn't, you begin a bunch of lifestyle changes, fixing the teeth, so on and so forth. Even if you're guessing, at least you're moving in the right direction. And that pH eventually shifts to that glorious morning where midstream urine and that pH paper comes up green and nobody cares but you. But that's all you need. That's a crescendo. That's a threshold moment. When you start to sleep straight, when in the beginning you're up 4 to 5 times a night, and then that glorious day, that glorious night when you realize, gee, I sleep straight. That's a crescendo. That's a climatic moment. That's a pivotal shift. You're on your 10th enema, your 15th enema, your 20th enema, your 25th enema, your 30th coffee enema. You still haven't seen that green stuff in the toilet bowl, and then boom, it comes down, and now you understand what these coffee enemas are all about. That's a crescendo. Well, here's the crescendo among crescendos. It's called the day you open your breath. Today's story is the story of breath. My point is, breath is one of the great, if not the greatest, crescendo. So let me get extreme. Don't talk about your health. Don't talk about curing your illness until you open your breath. You must attach to a physical, visceral experience of that. You have to do that. You can't let this notion of opening your breath stay somewhere up in the ionosphere, a figment of your imagination, something you nod and smile at. That's only in your mind, but not in your body. Don't let that happen to you, because you're missing out. You're missing out on something that really does tie the room together. Anyone that's been to my office here in Costa Mesa sees that great, wonderful picture of Jack LaLanne at Venice Beach in the 1940s. He's on top of about three other men, and they're standing in one of those totem pole sorts of configuration that acrobats do. And there he is, an icon, a legend, Jack LaLanne. But do you remember back then, when we were all toddlers, Jack LaLanne would tell people to take that breath. You know, breathe deeply. This whole thing about breath. This is a Western sort of a misconception that breath is you just inhale deeply. And you fill your lungs with breath, and that's breath. If you think that's the case, please lose that misconception. That was our innocence. So many may have contributed much along the way, but if we were left, or you were left, or our culture was left in the United States of America with this idea that you just breathe deeply so your rib cages expand, and that's exactly what constitutes a good breath, please don't think that. That has nothing to do with opening your breath. Nothing whatsoever. What opening the breath has to do with is an experience that almost equates to trying to explain somebody what pregnancy and birth is. In that if you've never had a birth, how are you supposed to relate to the phenomenon? Ladies, do men understand birth? How can they without the experience? They can be around it, they can cultivate it, they can watch it, but they're not going to experience it. This is kind of the problem with breath. So you're going to have to forgive this inequity in the descriptions today. When someone takes a breath, a true diaphragmatic breath, chemicals are produced. I'm going to call them God chemicals. Yes, you produce endorphins. Endorphins and cephalins, dynorphins, chemicals we don't even understand yet, that put you in the high state of mind. Breath is supposed to alter your state of consciousness. Very dangerous words for people of a limited perception of reality. A statement like that tends to scare people. Or it just leaves you interested, and yet your experience of that is so distant that the word breath alters consciousness is something you hear, and you're glad to just let it stay up there in the ethers without it having any real impact and phenomenon upon your life. Well, I am here today to tell you that it's going to have an impact not just upon your life, but your health, the physiology of the cell biology, the way the DNA configures, the way the genes express or don't express, your mitochondrial outputs, your infective, anti-infective capacities, the ability of your cell to generate its own antioxidant systems through the glutathione, all the contortions of the membranes, all the blebs, bleebs, and blobs of everyday cellular life are intricately connected to the breath. So this isn't something you get out of. This is something you suffer by if you don't have a visceral experience of breath. Animals have it. You don't know they're having it. You don't realize when your dog yawns and your cat yawns and then rolls its eyes and then rolls its spine that it's doing something related to its breath that gives it superior health. All right, let's cut the theology and get straight to it. Let's follow that molecule of breath up your nose. If it goes up your nose, you at least start in the right track. If it's going down your mouth, if breath is going down your mouth because it can't go up your nose, you're out of the race to begin with. That's a serious potential illness on the way. If breath does not go through the nasal passages and instead goes down the mouth because the nasal passages are blocked, the septum's deviated, there are nasal polyps, your nose is stuffed, your sinuses are infected, whatever it may be, breath must go up the nasal passages, not down through the mouth, because if breath goes up through the nasal passages, and again, you're going to have to get to the website. straighttalk.cc, straighttalk.cc, not .com, two T's, straighttalk.cc. Get to the radio literature section. Those of you who know the show, you're already there. If you're new to the show, straighttalk.cc, and just get to the radio literature section. There's a tab on the top. Click the tab. I've got about 45, 46 pictures for you. Every one of them selected this morning. Every one of them is important to this show. If breath goes up the nose, up the nasal passage, and if you're going to follow it on the website, then you're going to look at picture number 32. Picture number 32. You're going to see the picture of a face and a nose. And just picture air going up that nose to what we call the ethmoid bone. Again, you've got a multitude of bones of the skull. Each of those bones comes apart. If on the website you look at picture number 19 or picture number 18, there's a number of pictures there, including 18, where you can see the bones of the skull separating, 17 and 19. So we can say that the bones of the skull are the frontal bone, the parietal bones, the occipital bones, the lacrimal bones, the mandible, the maxillary bones, the ethmoid bone, the sphenoid bone. And you can look at a picture of someone's skull. But if you look at page 7, picture 17 or picture 19, you can see those bones separated. Each bone separates to a separate bone. That's very important for you to understand. It's even better if you can get a pictorial view of that. And the reason is, when air goes up through the nostril, it's going to hit the ethmoid bone. Again, if you take a look at picture number 29 or picture number 30, you're going to see where the arrows point in the skull. That if the nose, if the air goes up through the nostrils, it finally hits a place in the ethmoid bone where there's a sinus. And just as it goes through that bone onto the other side of your skull where your brain sits, it goes through a bunch of tiny little holes. These tiny little holes are called the cribriform plate. You can see pictures of that where the arrow is on picture number 29. Picture number 30. You can see the cribriform plate where each picture points to it in that open plate of the skull. Now, this is a key essential understanding here, in that as the air goes up through the nostrils, it's going to hit the ethmoid bone, and the air, the vibration of the air, this is where the genius is. The vibration of the air is going to pass through the holes in that bone. It's going to pass through the cribriform plate, and it's going to start to tickle what's on the other side of that plate, which is the base of your brain. So if you're looking there at picture number 29 or picture number 30, understand that we pulled your brain out. Those of you on the road who don't have the pleasure of the computer, if we took off the top of your skull and pulled out your brain, if we took off the top of your skull and pulled out your brain, when you inhale through the nose, that air goes through a bone right in the base of your skull. And that vibration through this sponge-like cribriform plate, this sinus, that air starts to rustle the underside of your brain. Now, all of you know, if you've listened to this show before, that your brain is surrounded by dural tissue. Picture number 34, picture number 35, picture number 36. That air goes up through the nose, through the cribriform plate, and on the other side of that cribriform plate, it tickles the underside of the skull. But your brain, which it's going to start to tickle, is wrapped in dural tissue. That's very important. Because if you remember, the dural tissue surrounds the brain, divides the hemispheres of the brain and surrounds the spinal cord. It's one big sheath. Dura mater, as in tough mother. Dura mater in Latin, we call it dura mater. Its translation into English is tough mother. When you dissect it out in labs, it's like tarp. It's like what you would make a tent out of. And when it's being tickled by the vibration of the air through the nose, the tickling of that sheath of dural tissue tickles itself around the brain and down the spinal cord. Breath is a vibration, and its vibration sets up a subsequent vibration throughout the entire brain and spinal cord delivered through the dural tissue. When you're breathing through your mouth, that does not happen. Opening your breath is dependent upon being able to get air up through the nostrils. And that must be duly noted if you're on your road to recovery, if you're looking for radiant health, if breath is life, if there's something more to breath than just breathing deeply, it first starts by having a patent nasal passageway, a deviated septum, polyps in the nose, sinuses. All these different things have to be mended so you can get that tickling to the dural tissue around the entire skull. Down the spinal cord we go. Now, hold that thought and connect it to another, the diaphragm. In a diaphragmatic breath, which is what we're talking about, in a functional breath, in a breath that's going to ultimately open your body in much deeper, much more phenomenal ways, we connect that breath to the diaphragm. If you look at picture number one on the website, if you look at picture number one, you're going to look at the diaphragm and what it looks like, its shape and its attachments. So understand the diaphragm is like a dome that divides the body in half. It's this dome-like muscle, and it's got connections. It ties itself in to the lumbar thoracic spine, T10, T11, T12, L1, the 10th, 11th, 12th thoracic, first and second lumbar vertebra, through what we call the crura, C-R-U-S, singular, the right and left crura of the diaphragm attach into the spine. The rest of the diaphragm attaches into the underside of the ribs, from the front of the rib all the way to the back. So this dome-like concoction of thin muscle attaches to the spine and attaches to the ribs. In the center, so if you're looking at picture number one on the website, if not, you have to imagine this, and you can. Now, in the very center of that diaphragm, you can see that on picture two and picture three, is a white tendon. Now, a tendon is fibrous. You've got to remember that. The center of the diaphragm. That center is what we call the central tendon. It's a very fibrous area. And depending upon how much tension that tendon is holding, and hold that thought for a moment. Depending on how much tension that central white area is holding determines how far down that diaphragm moves when you take an inhalation. So if you check picture number 11 on the website, you can see that when you inhale, that dome goes down. So belly goes out like a baby breath. Belly goes out. Like the way animals breathe, belly goes out the way a singer sings. A diaphragmatic breath, just like they teach you in Lamaze when you're pregnant, all the way to Pavarotti. A diaphragmatic breath begins with the belly moving out. As that belly moves out, the diaphragm moves down. How far down that diaphragm moves is variable. Diaphragm may move down a little or a lot. Whether it moves as your belly goes out a little or a lot relates to the tension in the central tendon of the diaphragm. So if you bend over and try to touch your toes, the tendons in your hamstrings and in your calf and in your Achilles tendon determine how far you go down as you reach down to touch your toes. The tension in those tendons controls the motion. Same thing when you take a belly breath. How far down that central tendon and the diaphragm drop depends on the tension in the center of that diaphragm. That's a big concept. Because if that tendon, if it lets the diaphragm really push down, the diaphragm will start to pull on its attachments to the spine, the crus. So look at picture number one again. And if you can't see the website, just understand that the backside of the diaphragm, it's attached to T10, T11, T12, L1, L2, your low thoracic spine, your upper lumbar spine is where the diaphragm attaches. As the diaphragm goes down, if the central tendon lets it go further enough, you're going to pull on your thoracic spine. You're going to pull that thoracic spine towards your belly button. You're going to arch your thoracic spine at some point. In other words, you're going to pump your thoracic spine. As the belly goes out and the diaphragm goes down, if the central tendon lets that happen, it's going to pull the thoracic spine and you'll arch through your thoracic spine. That's the beginning of the stretch. Breath is a stretch. Breath is a massage of internal organs, and we're going to deliver that concept to you in living color over the next 10 minutes. Breath is the beginning of a gateway into the subconscious. Breath is an initiation into the full electrical power of the vagus nerve as it delivers its parasympathetic flow to the organ systems. There are a myriad, there's an abundance, a prosperity, a multitude, a mass diversity of benefit by getting a real breath. And that breath has nothing to do with, God bless him, what Jack LaLanne was talking about in the 50s and 60s. You have to upgrade your understanding. That's why you listen to this show, to upgrade your understanding. If you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health. Get to the website, get to the archive, straighttalk.cc. If you're still lost and can't find the radio literature section, I get comments every week. Somebody can't find something. The top of the homepage website, it says radio literature. Just press that tab and you'll see all 40 or so pictures come up. Very simple to do. So the belly goes out, the diaphragm comes down. If the central tendon lets it, the diaphragm goes down far enough to pull on the spinal column, on the bones of the spine, and you begin to arch in the low back. You get your first stretch. Now, what you have to remember is that central tendon is variable. It doesn't give every diaphragm permission to go all the way down. First of all, if you pull in when you breathe, if you're not a belly breather, first of all, if the connective tissue on your abdomen is too tight, as you take that breath, you can't push your belly out. As you take that breath, the belly won't go out. If you spent your whole life stuffing it in, the belly doesn't push out. You won't be able to coordinate the process. You won't be able to connect to the motion. You'll seem uncoordinated in your ability to do what's natural, which is just let the belly come out. Remember in grade school when they told you to sit up straight and tuck your belly in? Remember when you had to march in the band? Remember you had to stand at attention while your superiors came in? Remember your time in the armed services when you saluted with that belly in? Remember those girdles that grandma used to wear? Remember our whole society devoted to keeping the belly in. And yet you'll never know a diaphragmatic breath. You'll never understand what breath truly is to your health unless that belly can come out. So right there from the beginning, there can be issue with that. Then the diaphragm will contract to emotion. Emotion, negative emotion, anger, rage, frustration. Internalized emotion. The diaphragm will contract to that. The diaphragm, through the central tendon, will contract every time you get angry, every time you think negatively, every time you hold frustration, every time you hold it in. How many times over the last day, week, month, year, decade have you held it in? How many times when you were little were you told to shut up and keep it to yourself? How many times were you told by your superiors, by your loved ones, to just shut up because what you think and say doesn't matter, and you have to hold it in to survive? So many of us as adults are left with a central tendon that's constricted. Even if the belly could come out, the diaphragm can't move down. Well, of course it moves down. Any good pulmonologist would tell you it moves down. Anybody that studies the motion of the organ systems can see it move down. The point is, if you study the science, I'm talking about the MD, PhDs that study the science of the diaphragm. They will tell you that respiratory excursion, inhalation, and how far that diaphragm moves down can vary many, many times. And the point is, if due to frustration, you have an inability to release the central tendon of the diaphragm, it can't move down far enough to arch the spine. You don't get the bend in the spine at the end of inhalation. It doesn't exist for you. Your spine stays rigid through inhalation and exhalation. There is no motion through the spine. And this is the first disaster of breath when the central tendon is too tight. But let's say that's not an issue for you, and fortunate you are. Because if that central tendon drops far enough, lo and behold, another phenomenal benefit of the breath. And if you're on the website, view picture 9 and picture 10. If you look at picture 10, you're going to see the heart. The heart that sits on top of the diaphragm. Picture 1, you can see the heart sitting on top of the diaphragm. But the covering to the heart is called the pericardium. It's made of the same tissue that the dural tissue is made of. It's made of a connective tissue that's tied in to the diaphragm. There's a connection. There's a physical entrapment between the heart and the diaphragm, so that if the diaphragm pulls down, the heart pulls down. That is a phenomenon of the mechanics of breath. Again, if that central tendon pulls down far enough, if that belly goes out far enough, the heart will be pulled down sufficiently to massage the heart. The trapped, stagnant blood, all that cholesterol sitting there waiting in combination with free radicals and an inflammatory process in the coronary arteries, waiting to stick to the inside of your coronary arteries and create the buildup of plaque. Not if that heart is sufficiently massaged. Not if that heart is effectively, in a gentle way, pulverized, twisted around, pulled to its limits, massaged. There's no such thing as heart disease. Breath has a biomechanical benefit to the body. What that means is your organ systems get washboarded. That's massive. That's massive. When you put the massage that breath can give the heart next to all the herbs in Kingdom Come that you've spent money on, they're competing with each other, to say the least. It is a travesty to leave out what patent breath what the true experience of breath can do for the cardiovascular system. It is a travesty, as in tragedy, not to know that. So listen deeply. The belly goes out because you've trained it to. The diaphragm pulls down because you've let go. The spine is beginning to arch. As that central tendon of the diaphragm comes down far enough, as the spine arches, the heart is pulled with it. As the heart is being pulled down, the air is expanding out to the rib cage. So the rib cage from the lower to the middle to the upper rib cage begins to expand. There's one little thing I'm going to insert here. It's in a picture. You just have to see this picture. Of course, Netter has helped us. Frank Netter, the medical doctor that changed graphics. Picture number 5. Picture number 2. If you're not looking at the pictures because you can't, understand that there's a hole in the diaphragm. There's a hole. There's actually 3 holes in the diaphragm. And through one of those holds comes the esophagus. The esophagus, on its way to the stomach, comes through. It courses through a hole in the diaphragm. And around that hole are the 2 cruces, the crura of the diaphragm. You can see this brilliantly in picture number 5, close up. In picture number 2, that's the big view. But here's the point. Suppose that central tendon's tight. Suppose those 2 cruces, the crura, suppose they're pulling tight. You can see easily if the central tendon is tight, if the crura are tight. As it comes through the hole in the diaphragm, it'll choke the esophagus. That same central tendon of the diaphragm, that same area we depend upon to get patent breath, just happens to have the esophagus as it becomes the stomach coursing through a hole right through the central tendon. And that hole is tied to the spine with 2 pieces of connective tissue, the right and left cruce. If those tissues are tight, it'll choke your esophagus. Somebody for a bottle of Carl, a bottle of aloe, and a bottle of vitamin D, tell me what you get when you choke the esophagus. I'll let it out of the bag later on. Somebody tell me. Get onto the website. Don't call the order line, the office. Tell me on the website. If that central tendon's tight, if the 2 cruces are tight, and you have that esophagus coursing through the diaphragm, if you don't have a connection to patent breath, if you're out there trying to solve all sorts of symptomologies, taking all sorts of pharmaceuticals, and you're tight in that central tendon because you're holding your emotions, because your spine is not arching in the thoracolumbar region, what are you going to get? The 2nd or 3rd leading cause each day in the world of why people spend money on pharmaceutical drugs. And off that, we've spawned all these interesting little diseases, and it's simply to be found and solved and truly fixed if you can just understand picture number 5 and picture number 2. Simple stuff right in front of our American faces. Pat yourself on the back if you've already gotten to the comment section. You should never know a sick day in that way. So look at the benefits now of patent breath. Are you breathing correctly? How do you know? We'll get to that. Belly out. I hope you can belly breathe. Can you feel the arch in the spine at the end of your inhalation? As you take an inhalation, at the end of that inhalation, do you feel an arch in your spine? That central tendon's got to let go. That diaphragm's got to drop low. After that diaphragm drops low, you may feel breath up in your chest. You may feel a pleasant expansion into your chest. You may not know what I'm talking about. You may hallucinate that you know what I'm talking about. Be real with yourself here. It is an unmistakable pleasurable sensation that occurs when the belly goes out and the diaphragm drops down and the spine arches and the heart begins to follow the central tendon down. It follows the diaphragm down so that finally the lungs expand, and as the lungs expand, the lungs pull on the muscles of the neck, the scalenes, the anterior scalene muscles that go from the back of your neck to the front of your first and second rib. At the end of breath, at the end of inhalation, as the rib cage expanded all the way up, those frontal muscles begin to stretch. So at the end of inhalation, you should feel breath all the way into your neck, the front of your neck. The front of your neck begins to let go, and you begin to feel breath into the neck. Now, if you feel breath into the neck, it's because that muscle, the scalene, is pulling. If that muscle pulls hard enough, long enough, pleasantly enough, it's going to pull on the bones in the back of the neck. Your first cervical vertebra, your second cervical vertebra, are going to be pulled, mobilized, moved by the scalenes, which are being moved because the rib cage is expanding. As the first and second rib expand to breath, it will pull on and mobilize the first and second cervical vertebra. You got to get that connection. You have to get that connection. To help you get that connection, picture 21, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27. I put six beautiful pictures on there for you. And if you look at the muscles, picture 24 and 25, in the back of your neck. If you take your hand, and even if you're driving, you can take your hand. If you're sitting at the breakfast table, not on the computer, you can take your hand and put it in that hole in the back upper part of your neck, in the occiput. You can put that hole in the suboccipital space. You just take your hands, put it in the back of your neck, just behind your ear, underneath the mastoid, in the suboccipital space. You'll find that hole. It's an easy hole to find. At the end of breath, you should feel a pull or a mobilization of that area in the back of the neck because the scalenes attach to the back of the neck. Those scalenes, your neck muscles, they course from the front of your two ribs to the back of your neck. At the end of inhalation, if you take it through the nose and expand, you'll start to feel a coursing into the back of the neck. Now that's a big return because the skull sits on the first cervical vertebra. And the first cervical vertebra sits on the second cervical vertebra. And the back of the neck, through the suboccipital space, if you see picture number 24, or where I asked you to put your fingers, if you go to that hole behind your head in the upper cervicals, just lateral to the center on each side, and you put your finger in that hole, that's where the vagus nerve is moving. The vagus nerve, cranial nerve number 10. Coming out of your brain and down to deliver the parasympathetic flow. All the parasympathetic nerves, almost all of them, 80% of them come through that spot in the back of your neck. Now there's a variation in flow because if those muscles, and I've pictured them amply there on those pages, picture 24 and 25, where you always get that upper cervical tension. If you've got knots of muscle there, there is a compression of the vagus nerve. If you have knots of muscle there, there is a compression of the vagus nerve. if you don't get the breath to the back of your head, so we say breath goes to the diaphragm, breath moves to the chest, breath moves to the upper chest, breath moves to the front of the neck, breath courses around to the back of the neck. This is not a fairy tale. This is not rhetoric. This is not a fantasy. This is a physical experience. I want to make sure all of you listening forevermore understand this is not a test. This is the real thing. This is your emergency broadcasting system. And I'm telling you, your pursuit of health is grossly and substantially hindered if you don't understand how to take a breath. And if you do, pat yourself on the back, because you've crossed another threshold. Just like pH is a threshold. Just like sleep is a threshold. Just like being able to see bile is a threshold. The body heals via thresholds. If you're lost and you're spinning in circles, I'll give you a phone number to call. 949-873-2127. 949-873-2127. You want to do a little threshold dance with me? You want to get on track? You want to change the way you look at your health? You want to change the way you look at your recovery? You want to change the way you look at your desire to become radiantly healthy, if that's your desire? Well, then understand, it's just a bunch of thresholds. And you won't leave this office with me being happy until you experience what it is to have a breath. That's big stuff. That's not little stuff. It's big stuff. Breath is life. There are at least 25 or 30 major American holistic movements trying to say this. And unless you experience it, it's all for nothing. So there you have it. The mobilization of the first and second cervical vertebra. You can see those pictures. Is it happening to you? If it is, you're going to feel it at the end of your breath. You're going to feel a warm feeling in the back of your neck, up in the suboccipital area. And your head is going to get loose on your neck. And your eyes are going to get clear. And if you can deliver that to yourself all day long, something else is going to happen. You're going to alter your brainwaves. You're going to send yourself into a more deeply relaxed state of being. And if you really work at that, if you really play with it, if you really learn to have fun with it, belly out, diaphragm coming down, central tendon opening, thoracic spine arching, heart following as a massage, the diaphragm, the lungs expanding, the interscapular muscles expanding, the scalenes being pulled upon, delivering that pleasant warm feeling to the back of your neck so your eyes roll, your eyesight clears, and your head just floats on top of your cervical spine. If you can deliver that to yourself continually, you'll bring yourself to an altered state of mind. You'll put out the best of yourself. I do it every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. This is my prayer, driven by a mastery of breath. So I can find the words, hopefully, to bring you to an understanding of an experience you might not be having. Now, a couple of fun facts. Fascinating little facts along the way. I want us to kick back and relax and take a look at this. Look at picture number. Can't get the picture number. There we go. Picture number 29. Picture number 30. Picture number 31, 32, 33. Take a look at picture number 33. It says Krista Galla. C-R-I-S-T-A-G-A-L-L-I. Look at picture number 30. If you look at picture number 30, it's a picture of the base of the skull. And that base of the skull, they shaded blue, the color blue, in a really important part. And you see those holes on either side of that little blue line? That's the cribriform plate. The dividing line on which either side you see those holes is called the Krista Galla. Krista Galla is English, translated from Latin, translated from Greek, translated from Egyptian, translated from ancient Egyptian. Translated from a day and a time when words were not words. Words were ideograms. Words told stories. Ancient Indian, ancient Chinese, ancient Middle Eastern, whether it's Farsi, hieroglyphics. Ancient words were not words. They were codes. They were stories. They were poems. And if you trace Krista Galla back far enough to Egyptian dynasties, Krista Galla meant portal. It meant starship. It meant portal or opening to another realm. That's what it truly meant if you take the translations of it back far enough. Even the ring of it in English, Krista Galla. That point right there, if you were to plug up those holes, so I want to make sure you're all doing this that can do it. You're on picture number 30. If you're driving, if you can't get to the computer, understand that as the air goes up through the nose, it passes through an opening in the ethmoid bone of the skull. So if you put your finger between your eyes, if you put your finger between your eyebrows, your finger's on the ethmoid bone, just about on the ethmoid bone. And the air going up the nostrils to this Krista Galla and these holes on either side of it that you're looking at on picture 30. If you were to plug up those holes, life would cease to exist as you know it. Life would cease to exist as you know it. Little things. All you've got to do, right? In the movies, in the mythology, the evil villain just presses a button and the railroad train goes flying off the cliff because one little track was switched. Just take your fingers and glue up those little holes in the Krista Galla. And you will experience life in a very bad way. And someone understood this. Someone understood this as far back as the beginning of recorded time. That is fascinating to me. It's fascinating to me that throughout history, world history, breath has always been understood as a portal, as a gateway to something bigger than self. Drugs? We do drugs. We do Prozac. We do Zoloft. We need anti-stress remedies. We take Wellbutrin, we take Ativan, we take Xanax. A nation addicted to drugs, one out of how many Americans? Our children? All of us looking for these chemicals to alter our brainwaves, and there we are in the anatomy of the ethmoid bone is a hint that somebody understood long before we did. That's fascinating to me. Stan Grof was a psychiatrist, Stanislav Grof. I put pictures on there of holotropic breath work. He was a psychiatrist sick of doing pharmaceutical drugs. He's in his 80s now, still going strong, still holding seminars. Some of those seminars are held in Los Angeles. Read about Stanislav Grof. Go to picture number 37, The Adventure of Self-Destruction. discovery, a holotropic breathwork experience with Stanislav Grof, MD. To talk to you about your problems, to give you advice about your problems, to bring you to a consciousness of why you have anxiety, of why you suffer, to give you a sense of why you feel the shame, the guilt, the anger, the rage, the sadness, the grief, the fear, the anxiety, to give you a sense of that wonderful that we have psychoanalytic theory. I just did the show, right? Freud, Jung, Reich, so on and so forth. But don't leave out breath. Because if breath goes the way I described it, if you can get that feeling in your body, patent breath, a patent biliary system, patency in the biomechanical field. Can you get center? Switching tracks now. Can you get center? Can you get your pH? Can you get your straight sleep? Can you use breath to shift yourself from high anxiety to bliss? Have you mastered these internal mechanisms? You want health? What herb should I take for my symptom? Are you kidding me? What are we doing? Who are we kidding? Reach deep and master this. It doesn't matter where you learn it. It doesn't matter who you learn it from. Because if you get it, it's a crescendo. Whether Stan Grof's holotropic breathwork, whether you learn it in a yoga class, whether you learned it from Jack LaLanne, whether you learned it from your prayer group, it doesn't matter. Whether you learn it in Russia or you learn it in South America, it doesn't matter. There's only one breath, the breath that works. Stick to the body. I'm asking you to understand something very important. As a doctor, you more than anyone, more than any of your patients, as a doctor, you will spend years of time and money and energy studying everything. And you have to think in terms of what unifies different perceptions of reality. There's only one breath, and that's the breath that opens up the body. And it feels a certain way. And if you can have that experience, you can bring your consciousness to another state. And that's the state in which you will begin to feel your bliss, which is going to mean something. Another relevant comment. It's going to mean along the way you may feel your emotions. Because emotions, sadness, grief, anger, rage, emotions block breath. The intuitive faculty, the vibrant you, is there, but it's under a pile of snow. It's under a pile of mud. And that mud is given to you in the form of negative emotion. Imprint. Babies know how to breathe. Adults lose it. Healing is getting back to it. Along the way, as you open the breath, the emotions purge. But I want to point something else out about breath, to broaden it, to deepen the context, to make it more functional. Do you understand that flexibility is going to be part of that? If the belly can't go out because the rectus abdominis is too tight, you can't take a breath. If the thoracic spine can't bend because you've never bended it, if you've been hunched over a desk in a kyphosis for 30 years, think of kyphosis. Kyphosis is when you start to round out in the shoulders. So you round out in the thoracic spine. You get that hunch in your back. And the shoulders start to come forward. And the neck starts to come forward. You're no longer a gymnast doing back bends. You're now in your 50s and in your 60s. And you're collapsing on the front of your body. You've got that bend in the spine, that hunch in the shoulders, we say. Well, if that's you, how's your rib cage supposed to expand? If that's you, how does the rib cage expand so the scalenes get pulled upon? If that's you, then how can the rib cage expand, the scalenes get pulled upon, so that the occiput and C1 can begin to breathe so you can deliver the current via the vagus nerve? You can't. Which means functionally, if you really want to do something with this, you have to get flexible, more or less. You may have to work your flexibility before you can start to have the physical experience of breath. Your best Tai Chi masters, unlike this facade of breath nonsense, so often misunderstood in the yoga community. The physical action of breath, of taking a breath in through the nose with the belly out, does not produce a visceral response if someone's not flexible enough. And so it's only when you're flexible that you can feel in your body the net benefit of breath. So to do it, to enact it, you have to train to it. Breath is a training that will ask you, depending on who you are and how much of an issue it is, to come to terms with your flexibility. Critical aspect to it. You may have to stretch in yoga for months before the diaphragm can begin to drop. So breath is life, and that life is an altered state where the God chemicals are produced, delivered via the vagus nerve into the DNA of the cell. And that's where your health lives. That's where your regeneration lives. That's where your future lives, I hope. If this show made sense to you, get on the website, get into the archives later on today, listen to it again. 949-873-2127. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. If you're lost in space, give us a call. See you next week.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.